Okay, just to say a few notes on the Haftorah for Parshas Vayetze, which is a run over the course of three prakim from Sefer Hosea, and some of it is familiar from another major Haftorah where we have elements pieced together from different Nevi'im, and that is Shabbat Shuvah. So some of the phrases here you will remember from there, and there's additional elements as well. And Shuva is essentially one of the major messages here. The Navi Hosea is quite upset with the Jewish people. This is a theme now for a couple of Haftorahs running, but here it's more about Avodah Zarah and idolatry and issues like that, and it's in that context that they're told that they have to do tshuva. So the opening line makes sense as far as a kesher to our parsha. The question is, what exactly is it doing here as part of the Navi's message? Let's opening pasuk is, hold on a second. Bring it up here. Sorry. Vayivrech Yaakov stay aram, v'yavod Yisrael b'shah, v'shah shamar. So Yaakov ran away to Aram, and there he worked for a wife, and he also, on her behalf, had to do guarding. That was part of his work. So, okay, that certainly reminds us of Parshas Vayetze, but what does that have to do with Hosea? Why is that here? What exactly is the message here? How is that a part of the Nevuah? How is that part of the Tochacha? So, as you could imagine, the Rishonim talk about this. Rashi and Ibn Ezra suggest that it's a message that the Jews should feel bad about Kfiyas HaTov, that they are not responding properly to the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who took care of their ancestor Yaakov, which is interesting, because why focus specifically on that with all the various episodes of HaKadosh HaTov we could look to, of Chasadim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's an interesting question, but that's how some of the Rishonim understand it. The Mari Kara understands it as Musar, which is also kind of narrowly focused, that here Yaakov, he listened to his mother. His mother told him to run away. So how come you guys don't listen? So another interesting kind of narrow focus of Musar. The Malbim understands it kind of the opposite way, that this is not praising Yaakov, but it's highlighting that just as he acted b'mirma, as he had to use a less than completely straightforward way of addressing his situation, so too, that's what ended up happening to him. So perhaps that's itself a kind of musar. Sorry. So that's an interesting type of understanding. Rav Rivlin, in his sefer, he focuses on that point, the idea ki'ilu Yaakov is being punished here for, or there's some mention of him being punished for the way he acted with the bracha. Of course, that's a whole complex topic of discussion, how exactly to understand that parsha, but it's last week's parsha, so it's a little bit outside of our jurisdiction here. But Rivlin does emphasize that, assuming that Yaakov did what he had to do, but it was certainly against his teva of emes Yaakov, to engage in a deceptive act, was an isayon like Avraham Avinu's nisyonos, like the Akedah that required him to go in the opposite direction of where his nature would take him. And in that sense, it had the risk that it could leave a bad residue, that it could leave remnants of that type of deception in Yaakov's soul, so it had to be cleaned out. And that to whatever extent there was any type of personal satisfaction he got in winning over Esav, so that needed a tikkun, that needed a kapara, and that's why he, to a certain extent, was treated the same way. Hi.
What's the benefit of having someone go completely against their nature? What is the aspect of the sound there?
Well, in the context, let's say, of Avraham Avinu, where it's more explicit there. So the question is, if we want to, it's less clear that that was the purpose of Yaakov's story, but let's say in the context of Avram's story, so the Vilna Gaon makes this point that, and I think there's a lot more to say about that, that it very much could be a Pesach into understanding the Akedah as a whole, but just to address it briefly, that if somebody is just a nice guy, so he does chasadim because this is teva, it's how he feels more comfortable, so then perhaps that doesn't show that there's anything godlike about it, that there's anything that reflects one's appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically. Mm-hmm. So the fact that somebody can be called upon to act in opposite directions, so then presumably it's not his teva, that shows that it's genuine, and that shows that it's because he's doing God's will, and it's not just because that's what's most comfortable to him. The Vilna Gaon understood in that vein that that's why the two mitzvot where the Torah tells us that you have a promise of long life are Kibbud Av Em and Shiluach HaKein, because he atypically understands the mitzvah of sending away the mother as actually not what the mother wants, as somewhat cruel to the mother. And yet, nonetheless, that's what the Torah requires in this case. So it's not the usual understanding of what's going on there. Most understand it differently. But that being the case, so it's the opposite of Kibbud Av Em. So to draw on opposite instincts in the service of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's how we know that you are genuine. Rav Heschel Reisman, Ram Heschel Reisman, in a sefer on the parasha, so he suggests that the reference to Yaakov's fleeing here has another component to it, and maybe that's a part of the theme of the Haftarah, that while Yaakov was on the run, so he invented an important product that we use Ad Hayom Hazeh, and that's called Ma'ariv. So he instituted Tfilas Arvis. And Ma'ariv is a fascinating tefillah. If we had more time, maybe we would speak about that in greater detail. But Ma'ariv is a tefillah which should be equal to all the other tefillos, especially if we assume that the tefillos avos tiknu, which is a machlokus in the Gemara, but to the extent that the tefillos are associated with the avos, so then Ma'ariv is at least as good as the other two tefillos. And Midrashim suggests that Yaakov is the greatest of the Avos. So Ma'ariv should be the most chashuv of the tefillos. And yet, what we find is that Ma'ariv is treated as a reshus. That's a machlokas in the Gemara as well. But we conclude the halacha that tefillos arvis reshus, which does not mean that you don't have to show up, but it means something complicated, the halacha. It's an interesting question. The Rishonim talk about what it means. In any event, they agree that Bezman Hazeh, we have accepted Ma'ariv as, practically speaking, a chova, even though there may be some continuing nafkaminas to the fact that Ma'ariv is termed the Rishos. But it's hard to understand, because why should Yaakov's tefillah get any less respect than the other tefillahs? So the Zohar suggests that Yaakov was on a different level, and we simply can't do it the way he did it. And it seems like the message there is that Ma'ariv is a very individualized tefillah, and it reflects a very personal encounter with Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what the pasuk conveys, Vayivka Bamako, that he met God, he encountered him, and he spoke to him. And it's the tefillah that is offered in darkness, when you're alone, when you're separated from the rest of the world. And it represents a very personalized exchange with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So perhaps that type of intimacy in the tefillah is being alluded to here, that just like Yaakov on the run turned to God, so the nation is being told also to turn to God. We'll see if we have opportunity to expound on this, but it's very interesting, just as a ha'ara, that there are at least two halachos, two things that we do nowadays that we take as obligatory. And as far as the halacha really is conveyed, as far as the Gemara is concerned, they're not obligatory. So one is Maariv, and the other is lighting Hanukkah candles, as the Mahadrim and the Mahadrim, lighting three candles on the third night of Hanukkah, four candles on the fourth night of Hanukkah. That's not required, according to the Gemara. It's Mahadrim and the Mahadrim, and yet we all do that. So the nature of taking on both of these practices as something that we view as obligatory, even though Al Pi Din it isn't, may reflect that there's something about them that has to be that way. I think in the Sefer Shari Orim, one of the older editions of Meir Tzvi Bergman's Sefer on Chumash, he says that's pshat when it comes to Hanukkah, that Hanukkah is about Hodah. So Hodah, it can't be compelled. It has to be voluntary by its nature. So even if it's going to be that we're all going to light the menorah that way, still, the way it's formulated, it has to be as an option. And perhaps when it comes to Maariv also, Maariv, functionally speaking, we're going to treat it as an obligation. But it's such a personal encounter that it has to be phrased to us, it has to be conveyed halachically as a rishus. So in any event, that's what what might be evoked here as well, that this turning to God that Yaakov did at that time, maybe the Navi is also trying to convey that. Rav Matasiel Solomon commented, the Mashkiach of Lakewood, he commented that here the pasuk says Vayivrach, that Yaakov ran away, that he fled. But in the Parsha, it doesn't use that language. He walked, he sauntered, doesn't have the same kind of connotation as fleeing. And it's an interesting difference. And especially, it seems like the Haftorah is really more accurate in this sense, because indeed Rivka told him to flee. And it was pretty clear that he was running for his life, that he was indeed in big trouble. So the idea that he fled seems to fit more. So why is it that the Parsha uses different language? So Rav Solomon understood that this is to reflect his inner state, that when it comes to the facts on the ground, so yes, indeed, he had to run. He was in trouble. He had to flee. But because of his relationship with God, because of his bitachon, so he had inner tranquility, and therefore the way he actually related to it was simply as going and not as fleeing. So this is discussed in by Dr. Eliezer Schnall's article in Mitoch Ohel on the Haftorahs, where he notes that there is a message here that an emuna and a Kadosh Baruch Hu can bring about inner tranquility, can bring about a sense of peace. And he proceeds to relate there how this was asserted by Rabbeinu Bachya in the Chovos HaLevavos, and to talk about the implications thereof. He relates there at length how there was a study done to establish whether faith in mitzvos, faith in God, can indeed lead to reduced anxiety, reduced concern, to greater peace of mind. It's an interesting study. It's an interesting article. One has to also wonder to take it in balance with the famous footnote 4. You know, in Halachic Man of Rav Soloveitchik, there's a footnote, which is one of the most often quoted references, footnote 4, where he asserts that the purpose of Torah is not necessarily to give you peace of mind, it's not necessarily to remove all kinds of stresses and tensions, and perhaps it causes its own. And he suggests that that's a notion that you find outside of Orthodox Judaism, that religion is there to give you this kind of tranquility. So perhaps they're referring to different things, but it's just interesting. There is somewhat of a tension between those two portrayals. But in any event, this is an interesting suggestion as far as the difference between the Parsha and the Haftorah. In any event, it does highlight that, especially now, we talk about some of the heightened tensions that we have as a Jewish community in terms of security considerations and the like, and what exactly is our attitude supposed to be towards danger and towards precautions. And it could be that this is conveying a particular balance as far as that's concerned, that you have to do the hishtadlus, that you have to flee if you're in danger. You can't stay in the place where you're at risk. But as far as your inner mindset, so it doesn't have to be in a state of anxiety. It should reflect this bitachon that Yaakov was conveying, and perhaps indeed that is a part of the message that this variance in language is suggesting. Okay, just to look at some of the other psukim, to skip a little bit. So as part of the Musar Shmuz here in the next parak, in Parak Yud Gimel, so there is reference to the idea that, you know, from Shmuel, quite a long time earlier, the Jews had requested a king. And Shmuel gave them a whole speech about how that's not necessarily so great for them. And it seems like there's a reference here in Parak Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Etein lecha melech ba'api, ve'kach be'evrosi. So I give you kings in my anger, and I take them away in my anger. And the previous pasuk says, "He malchucho, where is your king now?" So Efo, where is he? Yoshiacha. He's let him come and save you. So the reference seems to be to this speech that Shmuel gave, where the people had requested a king, and he told them that it's not good for you, and he listed all the concerns. So why is that relevant here? So Rav Rivlin comments on this as well, and he suggests that perhaps the message is that the offensive aspect of the people asking for a king, when they could have related more directly to Ribono Shel Olam, is essentially they are trading the Melech Malchei Hamlochim for a Melech Basar V'dam, and that was quite a bad deal. And now it's even worse. To go for Avodah Zarah is really treating Kadosh Baruch Hu in an even more egregious fashion, and perhaps that's why there's this reference to Shmuel to say that just like then you were headed in that direction of not appreciating God as your God, so too that's what the Avodah Zarah that you are taking up now is also conveying. So they have to do tshuva from that. So just to take a look a little bit at the part that we know from Shabbos Shuva. This is from Parak Yedaleh, towards the end of the Haftorah. Shuva Yisrael, Hashem Elokecha, Ki Chashalta Ba'avonecha. You should return to God. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Emes LeYaakov on Hosea has a lengthy discussion about this and how this fits into the whole theme, that there is a message of tshuva as a community, as a nation. There's a message of tshuva as a nation that is a major part of what the Navi is conveying here. And the next pasuk says, "Kchu imachem dvarim." So the idea of Kchuimachem Dvarim, so there are different interpretations as to what the Dvarim are. It says take words with you. Pasha Pshat is that this is a reference to Vidui. We know the Rambam focuses on Vidui as the tool for tshuva. It sounds like the Rambam says that Vidui is the mitzvah, and that brought about a lot of commentary and controversy. Is the Rambam not saying that tshuva is a mitzvah, only Vidui is a mitzvah? So Rav Soloveitchik explained that Vidui is the maisa mitzvah, Vidui is what we say in order to bring about the mindset of tshuva. So perhaps that's why the pasuk is emphasizing it here. And others say differently, that this is a reflection of the idea, and I think we spoke about this when it was Shabbat Shuvah, if I recall, that the idea that tshuva on the highest level is accomplished through Talmud Torah, that the notion of tshuva me'ava, I think we spoke about this at more length then, the idea that there is an even greater level of tshuva. The previous pasuk that we mentioned, Shuvah Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha, Gemara says, Gedola tshuva shemagas al kisei hakavod, that tshuva brings you all the way up to God. So the highest level of tshuva is tshuva me'ava, and the Gemara doesn't explain how you do tshuva me'ava. So Rav Aaron Cutler suggested, based on various comments in the Rishonim, that Talmud Torah is the vehicle for tshuva me'ava. And therefore, perhaps that's what's being conveyed here. Kuhi machim dvarim, take words of Torah, and that will be the tool in order to return to God. And the pasuk ends off by saying, "Neshalma farim svaseinu," that if we're not able to give the bulls, we're not able to bring the korbanos, so our lips will do it instead. And that relates both to the idea of tefillah, B'makom Karbanos, but also the obligation to recite the Parshias of the Karbanos. I think we mentioned that a few weeks ago also. The idea that when we don't have the Beis HaMikdash and we're not able to actually bring Karbanos, so then how do we fill it in? How do we replace it? So we replace it through tefillah, and we replace it through studying the Karbanos, and that's what Avraham Avinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that how do I know that my descendants will hold on to the land and will be able to stay in Eretz Yisrael? It's the Gemara in Masechas Megillah and the Gemara in Masechas Tainus as well. And God says, well, they'll bring Karbanos if they sin. And Avraham says, well, what if there's no Beis HaMikdash? So they should recite the Parshios of the Karbanos. And that's what the last Mishnah in Menachah is going to be, Daf Yomi, in about a week, a little more than a week, week and a half. So the Mishnah says that Kala Osik Bataras Ola Kihilu Hikriv Ola, Kala Osik Bataras Shlamim Kihilu Hikriv Shlamim, that whoever learns the topic of the Karbanos, it's as if he brought the Karbanos, and that we associate with this pasuk, Neshalma Parim Sfaseinum, Parim Sfaseinum. So that's a very important pasuk as well. And the Haftorah ends on a very often quoted pasuk with many levels of meaning to it. Mi chacham v'yavin eila navon v'yedoeim ki yasharim darchei Hashem v'sadikim yelchuvam ufoshim yikoshuvam. So first of all, here you have essentially the source of Chabad, Chachma, Bino, V'das, all identified in the pasuk. Mi chacham v'yavin v'yedoeim. So the idea that these three different levels of insight, of wisdom, of knowledge are all identified here in that order. And then the pasuk tells us that God's ways are straight and that tzaddikim will go on them and poshlim yikoshlubah, and the sinners, they stumble on them. So essentially what the pasuk is conveying is that God is constant and the Torah is constant. That's the straight path, and it doesn't change. The tzaddikim just follow the straight path, so they succeed. And the poshim, the sinners, they trip because they're not walking straight along the path, which conveys the idea that, I believe this quote was attributed to Cecil B. DeMille, you know, he made the movie, The Ten Commandments. I don't know how religious he was, but saw this quote in his name, that you can't break the commandments, you can only break yourself against the commandments. That's essentially the message here. The path is constant, and if you're in sync with it, then you'll do well, and otherwise you won't. And the Gemara tries to understand what exactly the message is. So the Gemara in Sefes Nazir, Daf Chav Gimel, but Aleph, and other places as well, there's a whole back and forth about what exactly is being conveyed here. And perhaps the message is that Kavana is crucial, so you have to have in mind to do the right thing. Because the Pasuk is saying that there's one thing here, and some people do well and some people do not so well. So maybe it means that you could have an action that's a mitzvah, and if you have a kavana for a mitzvah, so then that's good, and otherwise it's bad. So the Gemara suggests maybe, let's say, we're talking about eating matzah, and if you eat matzah, l'shem kavana, so the kavana's mitzvah, so then that's a good thing, and if you do it with bad intentions or ulterior motives, so then it's not. And the Gemara says, really, could that be? You're saying that somebody does a mitzvah, so they're called poshim. It doesn't seem to be fair. So ultimately the Gemara concludes that it's the opposite, that it's about the concept of an aveiro lishma, that there are some actions which are averos, and yet they were done for good reasons, and that is in a whole different category. The Gemara says, Gedola Aveira Lishma, Mitzvah Shalol Lishma. And it talks about, for example, Lot's daughters with their intent to repopulate the world. And that perhaps an action that is ostensibly an Aveira is justified through its positive intent. And that's a whole discussion. When exactly to apply that principle. I believe Schechter talks about this in the Sefer Bikvei Atzon. It's a very fascinating idea. Another story of Schechter relates, not there, but it relates in Shir, that the Noda Behuda had a tshuva. Noda Behuda was a big misnaged, who was very opposed to Hasidus that was developing at that time. And one of the issues that he strongly disputed was the idea of reciting L'shem Yichud before doing mitzvos. He thought that undermines the inherent kavana in mitzvos and does other objectionable things. So he had a whole tshuva against it. And he ended with a reference to this pasuk. He said that tzadikim yelchu bam v'poshim yikashlu bam. So he was drawing on this idea that it seems like a good thing, but it takes you onto a different path. So he wrote in his tshuva, Tzadikim Yelchuvam V'chasidim Yikash Lubam. And he put the word chasidim in there. So the publisher apparently was a chasidish man. He didn't want to leave it that way. So he put it back to the original language of the pasuk. He put it in as Poshlim Yikash Lubam. And apparently the Noda Behuda commented, he said, I took the poshim and made them into chasidim, and he took the chasidim and made them into poshim. But in any event, it's a reference based on this idea that the paths of God are straight, but the context that you bring to it can make all the difference. I'll just end going back a few psukim, the pasuk hey here. I mentioned that yesterday was my father's yahrzeit, and one comment that I had heard from him was about this pasuk, pasuk hey, a few psukim before the end. We know that Rav Kook is often credited with the idea that if we have a Churban, we have Galus because of Sinas Chinam. So the antidote to Sinas Chinam is Ahavas Chinam, that we have to love each other without enough reason, just like we're exiled because we hated each other for no good reason. So too, we have to have love without justification, so to speak. So my father pointed out that this idea is really from the Navi Hosea, and that appears in this pasuk of Ohavam Nidava, that God says that despite all the history here, I'll take them back and I will love them as an adava. I will love them as a donation, so to speak, not because it's necessarily earned or justified, but this is the concept of avas chinam, and that's what we're supposed to emulate, that we should also be able to have ava for people even if they didn't earn it, even if it's not deserved, so to speak, but as a tikkun to the unearned sinna that has taken us to such bad places, we should strive for avas chinam, for avam nedava, and that should, Be'ez Hashem, bring us to much better places. So we'll stop here. I wish everyone a safe and warm day, and see you, God willing, on Sunday.